The views and opinions expressed on this show are purely the views and opinions of the person who made them, and do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the show's commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. As the restriction on our God-given right to free speech manifests itself throughout the world, we are inspired by Jesus Christ's immortal words, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we reserve the rights to all our words. Thank you, and now enjoy the show.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticise. You are listening to ACH. I'm Andy, your host, and today I'm delighted to have a guy on who's been on with Paul and I before, but I've wanted to have him on for a show with just the two of us for a long while. Here's Sean Surplus of TCTA Unleashed. Sean, are you with me?
I am with you, Andy. How are you, sir?
I'm good. And yourself?
I'm doing okay. Doing okay.
Excellent. Well, folks, I've said in the past that sometimes I struggle at the weekend, that there's not a lot of shows to listen to. But Sean's show, I generally pick up on Saturday, and I really enjoy it. He's got a very unique take on things. It's a very exciting, fun show with a lot of humour in it as well. And the link to Sean's website, tctaunleashed.com, will be in the post for this show, and I urge you to check it out. And Sean, what can you tell us about your show?
You know, it's different to yours, of course, Andy. I mean, we have a different take on things, but we have a different way of delivering the message. You know, I sort of grew up on the streets on and off since I was 14, so I've got a rougher way of saying things, if you will. So people that, as I've said on your show before, might want to be a little bit cautious if they don't like bad language or something like that. But other than that, I still deliver the same kind of message you do, just in a very different fashion, bad language and all. And I appreciate your show as much as I appreciate mine. You deliver your message in your own way, and I've always enjoyed it. People can also find your show occasionally up on my website when I get the time, because as you know, I'm looking for a house at the moment, so I don't get a lot of time to post other people's shows at the moment, but they can check that out, of course, at tctaunleashed.com. Really enjoyed your latest show. But yeah, no, very much the same thing. We're talking about the same content some of the time, not all of the time, but we just deliver it in a different way.
Yes, and what other shows can you recommend for the audience? I mean, I know that you like Robert Ravolt, and he's been on your show a few times, and I always check his show out on RBN every weekend. I can pick that up on the Monday morning here, so that gives me something to listen to, and that's a great wrap-up show. Are there any others that you'd like to recommend for the audience?
Not a heck of a lot. These days, I don't get a heck of a lot of time to listen to a lot of other shows. Robert Ravolt, I try to catch as soon as I can, and yours, of course. But there's not a heck of a lot of other shows. I used to like some of the other shows on RBN and things of that nature, but a lot of them, as far as I'm concerned, have gone downhill. That's just my personal opinion. But with the shows I do have time to listen to are pretty much yours and Robert Ravolt's show. You know, you both have a humble way of delivering your message, and I enjoy that. You know, I tend to get a bit cocky sometimes, you know. I've got less patience for the world, I guess. But, just these days, yours and Robert's shows are the only ones I've been listening to.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting. And we were talking before the show about what we're going to cover today. And one thing that you mentioned is you wanted to talk about Bill Gates. So how would you like to start us off with that one?
Yeah, Bill Gates. It's an interesting thing because back when Al Gore was talking about global warming, by the way, that disappeared real quick, didn't it? Global warming's out the window now since COVID-19 come along, and then all of a sudden COVID sort of took a backseat slightly since the riots have started. Isn't it funny that the media will just move with whatever is the buzz at the time? Yeah, like when it comes to Bill Gates, I'm thinking, what does he have anything to do with vaccines when he's nothing medical? He's not a medical professional, okay? He's never, ever been through the study of being a medical professional. So what is he doing when it comes to saying that we should get our vaccines? You know, just because he has the money to be able to read certain books, usually written by people that are even above him, that have an agenda, doesn't make it so. I've never been vaccinated in my life, and I rarely get sick. I very rarely get the flu. Like the first flu I had, in fact, to give you an example, I went to the doctors for the first time recently since 2012. So I just don't get the flu. I don't get colds or anything like that, and I've never been vaccinated. And the doctor looked at me mortified. She was like, you haven't gotten your flu vaccine? I was like, no. And then I was recently in hospital for an asthma attack, not because of COVID-19 or anything like that. It's because I got a bit lazy and I went off my Preventer, the preventable inhaler, and I started packing some more of my stuff, and I stirred up a bit of dust. And of course, the dust got to my lungs and I ended up having an asthma attack. So I got rushed to hospital. Now, when I went to hospital, I was shocked to see that this young lady actually said, this young nurse, she said, oh, you've never been vaccinated. I said, no, I've never been vaccinated, not with a thing. And on the same token, I just don't get sick. Now, how quaint. And she said, well, some people need them and some people don't. Now, I don't think that anybody needs them, to be honest, Andy. But the thing is, for her to even go that far as to saying, well, you obviously don't need them and you're as fit as a fiddle. Now that we've secured the asthma attack, you're as fit as a fiddle. You've got the lungs of a malleable, you know. It just goes to show, what's Bill Gates doing trying to explain this industry that he is not a professional in? What was Al Gore doing trying to explain it? Al Gore wasn't a scientist. He was a he couldn't speak about global warming. He was a politician that was running for presidency over in the States. What was he doing sticking his nose in something he has no idea about? And was it any wonder that there were 1,000 scientists that came out initially and said he has no business in this and what he's saying is wrong? This is the same as Bill Gates. What has Bill Gates got to say about we all need to get compulsory vaccinated sooner or later for this COVID-19, a COVID-19 that's doing nothing to people, no less? We've had 103 deaths over here in Australia this year when it comes to the flu. And I just call it a flu. I don't call it COVID-19 because really that still hasn't been proven beyond doubt. So I just call it a flu. We've had 103 deaths Australia-wide. And you know what? We've had 5,000 and something recoveries. I don't have the statistics in front of me. I can dig them up in during a break if need be. But the thing is, if we're going to wax intellectual on this, if Bill Gates wants to wax intellectual on this, then what we need to do is we need to quarantine cars, because we're still getting from 1975, we had 3,000 and something deaths when it comes to car accidents, whether it be people being run over on the streets or people being smashing into each other out on the road because they were speeding or whatever. But nonetheless, we had 3,000 and something, I think it was 3,564 or something like that I was talking about on the show the other day. So therefore, we from 1975, we should have been quarantining cars because there's more deaths than what we're getting with what they call COVID-19. To this date, last year, in fact, 2019, we know we had over 1,600 traffic accidents. And, we're still driving. We're still out there driving a car. Shouldn't we be putting the cars away and doing what Amsterdam does, which is riding bicycles everywhere we go to our jobs and everything like that, unless we really have to use a car? This is ridiculous. Bill Gates has no business in this unless he's going to speak about the statistical facts of how people die each year on every platform, Andy.
Yes, yeah, I agree. I think there's the sort of meme that went round that why would we trust Bill Gates to prevent viruses getting into our bodies when he couldn't keep viruses out of his operating systems, you know? but the thing is, you know, you're absolutely right. It's there's obviously more to it. And I was listening to Dr. Lorraine Day. She's been on a lot of shows recently, including this one, and she always puts in a good performance. And she claims that Bill Gates's father was not only the head of Planned Parenthood or whatever it was called back then, but he was also the attorney for the Rothschild family in America. And she said he is Jewish. She said, do you honestly think that Bill Gates, that the Rothschild family would hire a non-Jewish attorney for their business? And so that was very interesting. And she said that I've got to check it out, but she's got some photos of Bill Gates when he was in his teenage years. And she said he looked like Menachem Begin or something like that. So, you know, you've got all those links there and things like that. And all it's just, it's like they're talking now, Sean, in the mainstream media, the second wave will be in September. You know, the script is all laid out. We just don't know what that's going to entail. What's it like? Over in Australia with this, how strict is this lockdown nonsense? I mean, what I found, if you go out, you know, you don't. There's a lot of pollen in that in the air at the moment. And summer's coming here and stuff, and that can make you cough or sneeze and what have you. And you're worried about doing that in public in case people, like, you know, run the other way and things like that. So, I mean, I, for example, I won't, if I'm going out to the shops or something like that, I won't have a cigarette or anything until I come back in case it makes me cough, you know, later in the day while I'm out. So we're taking all these precautions not to, you know, look stupid ourselves, but it means that we're all walking on eggshells all the time. How are people finding it in Australia?
It's exactly the same environment here, Andy. Exactly the same environment. A friend of mine by the name of Cam, short for Camellia, she was actually saying to me just the other day, we were bringing her back from work because her husband and I go and pick her up from work and he likes the company. So I jump in the car and off we go. And what happens is on the way back, we were talking about that very subject, about how, you know, it's not so much that people want to do the social distancing because they think they need it. It's more because the person in front of you, you think, well, what happens if they want the social distancing? So you stay away from them, not because you think you're going to catch something and possibly not because they think they're going to catch anything, but both of you are thinking the same thing. What happens if he is thinking, he might catch something from me, or I might be thinking I might catch something from them. And so we just keep the distance. It's the same. And the coughing thing makes me laugh because we've got a store over here. I don't know whether you've got it over there in the UK, Andy, but it's called Aldi's. It's a German store. Oh, you do, right? So what happens is you're walking through Aldi's and you're doing your shopping and you see someone sort of go, and they're trying to hold the cough in, and you're thinking they're doing that because they know that everyone's going to stay away from them. Now, you've got the same thing going through your mind. You're walking through the store and you're thinking, oh, well, I'm going to cough. How am I going to dodge this? Because if I cough, everyone's going to look. And it got to a point with me being me, you know how rough I can be because you've listened to the broadcast. But it got to a point with me being me where first I started going just to clear my throat. And then I thought, oh, bugger this. And then I just went, Oh, sorry. I had to get that out. I know everyone's afraid of somebody who coughs at the moment. I'm really sorry about that. But guess what? I cough daily, but it's not a corona thing. You're all safe. And then I saw grins on people's faces. Sometimes you've just got to loosen up, not the phlegm, not just the phlegm, but you've got to loosen up people's nerves because they're all thinking the same thing. Once in a while, it only takes you to say, you know, that it's all okay. I don't have corona. I have no flu-like symptoms. I just needed to cough. Now, Camelia said to me the other day, she said when we were bringing her home from work, she was saying that what did she say? I just totally lost my thought because I was talking about the coughing thing. I can come back to it anyway. She said something really important that made me think about the coughing thing. Anyway, yeah. But the coughing thing, same environment that we've got here, Andy.
That's what she said. She said, when you have to go into a store, you have to tick a box these days in some stores and in hospitals especially. Do you cough? Do you sneeze? Do you have sniffles? You know, do you have these symptoms? And she said, I tick yes to all of them. She said, I tick yes to all of them because that's what we do each day. Yes, during the day I have sneezed. Yes, during the day I have coughed. Yes, during the day I had some sniffles because it was a cold day. You know, it's like the whole steamroller mentality. Man gets run over by a steamroller, COVID-19. You know, a man gets hit by a car, COVID-19. A jet engine falls off and lands on someone's head, COVID-19. It's ridiculous. Of course we cough, of course we sniffle, of course we sneeze. Did we have any of these symptoms? Yes, we did.
Yeah, I think that you were talking about the, she'd gone out and there was some story with her, about how people are reacting and how people are, you know, sort of nervous again of coughing around other people and trying to hold it in or sneezing or what have you. I mean, it's funny because I have to get the train over to the big box store that I go to. And generally you get in a carriage and you've got the whole carriage to yourself. I mean, the stations are pretty deserted. And when I get on there, I'm always sort of, I get in there and I always have to cough and blow my nose and things like that. And fortunately, there's no one around, but I always sort of check in front of me and behind me just to be sure in case, you know, someone was going to have a problem. And the other day, a couple of weeks ago, I went into the bathroom on the train and there was a guy that was sat outside as I went in and what have you. And while I was in there, you know, I coughed a bit and blew my nose. And when I came out, he'd moved. You know, so he'd obviously heard me in there and got worried and went off somewhere else because he hadn't got off because we were still between stations. I think the whole thing out there, it's interesting how people's psychology, you know, works on a similar level. So it shows a lot of us are similar and thinking similar things. And it's just a shame that these people can't wake up to the scam that a lot of this is, as you and I have and so many others in the alternative media. And I even approached someone the other day. I was in a queue outside a store, and it's a person that I know, you know, always says hello, very sort of friendly woman and what have you. And I said to her, is this stuff, I don't believe this for a minute. She says, what do you mean? I said, well, you know, all this sort of locking people down. I don't know anyone who's got ill. She says, oh, yeah, there's someone who works here and their husband died of it and they're off. But there wasn't anyone else. And I didn't say anything to her after that. But when I got home, I thought, you know, how many people have relatives that die during their working life or something like that? And what was the underlying condition of this guy? Did he have any other illnesses? But again, you don't, when someone sort of rebuffs you when you're trying to come out with any sort of alternative viewpoint to the mainstream narrative, you kind of, I don't know, I have a tendency that I just don't push it because their mind's made up. And I guess because I have the platform of the show to get material out anyway, the way that society's been shaped now is that they can almost report you for a hate crime if you start saying things that disagree with the mainstream narrative. What are your views on that, Sean?
Yeah, let's go back for a second to what you said about the station being empty, the train station being empty. It's the same sort of thing here. Again, we're living the same environment. And when you get on the train, I had one woman in the same carriage as me. And when we got off the train, believe it or not, your listeners will be shocked with this. We have over here what we call howzos, where these people are really boisterous. They're like, "How are you, mate? How are you? Yeah, what's going on, mate?" And they won't be quiet. I could use worse words, I'm telling you. They just won't shut up. And so there was certain language going on between her and someone else on the phone. Then she gets off and she shows everybody her breasts to give you an idea of what sort of person we're talking about here. And I'm thinking, where have all the good people gone? Like this carriage was empty besides me and this boisterous person that felt necessary to show part of her body once she got off the train. I'm thinking, where have all the good people gone? It seems like all the commonsensical, logical, intelligent people have just gone into hiding. On this whole guys that if they get sneezed on, they're in a lot of trouble. You know, one of the things that I was saying on the broadcast the other day was they're actually some of the guidelines here at the moment are you can now have 20 people in your household. Number one, I never used to have 20 people in my household before COVID-19, right? you know, it's just ridiculous. You can have 20 people in a restaurant, but then all of a sudden they go on to say that you can have 50 people at a funeral. And I'm thinking, what's the big difference here? You know, if somebody's got COVID out of the 20 people in your household, or they don't, or somebody's got the COVID-19 out of the 50 people at a funeral, or they don't, if they do, you're going to catch it. You know what I mean? Like it's ridiculous. And the whole idea of the mask, where people cough all over it, a lot of these masks cop a lot of the sneezing and everything like that that goes on, and then you take it home and then you put it back on and guess what happens? And a lot of people are doing that. They're not often using new masks. So, look, when it comes down to it, it doesn't matter what kind of flu it is. Nobody wants a flu. Let's be straight here. Nobody wants to catch the flu if they can help it. But the thing is, you do not quarantine an entire population. What you do is you quarantine the elderly, the sickly, and the young, and the very young, and keep them away from the population that may end up getting this. But the population that may end up getting it, you know, those of us that are from our 20s to our 40s to our 50s can still hack it, can still get through it. Then we need to be out there keeping the economy going. But no, they shut down this whole economy. And they freely admit these days, especially in the UK, that it's non-consequential. It's a very mild flu. It's only the sickly and the elderly that are going to die from it. So people need to start taking this into consideration, because I've still got friends that I once thought intelligent that are out there, and they're saying, "Oh, no, I can't come near you, Sean. I can't come near you because of social distancing." And I'm thinking, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, what I find as well is that in the UK recently, they said that, you know, people should all go back to work. And what we've got with the underground, the tube, the subway, whatever you want to call it in London, you've got people that are still pressed up next to each other because they're not running enough tube trains for these people. So they're not social distancing, but that's apparently fine when they're all in there like battery hens, you know what I mean? But when you get a situation where that's apparently okay because it's unavoidable, but they won't let you go and visit your parents who live in another house. And I think that there's something a lot more sinister about that, because I'm the sort of person, I guess, because I I don't know, we're a similar age, Sean. I'm 47. And I can sort of get by without a lot of human contact. I can do things by phone and stuff like that. But my mother, it's always, oh, it's really nice to see you. Whereas I give her a call every day to make sure she's doing okay and stuff like that. But I think that that tends to be something for the elderly people, because they grew up amongst that close contact, and you know, they grew up when not everyone had phones and things like that. And I think that this is going to cause a lot of damage to them psychologically. And of course, we know that stress can lead to all sorts of other diseases. Do you think that this could be part of the reason why they're doing what they're doing, Sean, and preventing these people from basically seeing family members?
Absolutely. You know, if you read the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, where it speaks in certain protocols to breaking up family, breaking up community, especially when it comes to racial community. For instance, if you take a look at here in Australia, you know, the blacks tend to stick in their black neighborhoods. The whites tend to stick to their white neighborhoods and stuff like that. This is what they're trying to do is basically break up whites from whites and blacks from blacks. See, a lot of people say this is a psychological warfare going on. A lot of people say, oh, you know, this is all about breaking up the communities, like separating blacks from whites and everything. No. What blacks and whites were naturally going to separate themselves. That's what they've always done, because they stick to their own. What this is about is separating whites from whites, because if they can get whites to go against their own, and that's what we're seeing in some of these riots that are going on over there in the States at the moment. If they can get whites to go against their own whites, then that's a true separation. Rather than separating blacks from whites, which naturally happen, they're trying to separate blacks from blacks. So get some blacks to say, I'm on the side of the whites, and then get some whites to say, I'm on the side of the blacks. Next thing you know, you've got a total breakup of race and culture. You know, so this is what I think a lot of this is. It's a psychological warfare. You're absolutely right in what you say. You know, not being able to go and see grandma, not being able to go and see grandpa, make sure that you socially distance yourself from your cousins and your aunts and your, you know, your nieces and nephews. Don't hug them by all means. You know, don't have that loving, warm care going on in your families. It tears your spirituality. Now, I'm not religious, but I find religion separate to spirituality. It tears your spirituality apart, and a part of your spirituality is your loving family, being able to hug your son, hug your daughter, without anybody telling you you can't, if you know what I'm saying, Andy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that you mentioned about the riots. One thing that I found interesting, and I know that there are some people, because they've emailed me, who are sort of in their early 20s who listen to this show, but I understand we had a protest against this throughout, I think, about four cities. I think it was London, Manchester, I think Cardiff over in Wales and somewhere else in the UK. Right. And of course, these protests over here, they were getting violent as well. There were a lot of arrests, and there was no talk about them social distancing and all this sort of stuff. And they were all justified. I mean, what on earth are they protesting against the police force over here for something that happened involving someone in America and the police in America, where the whole system is different? They carry guns, all these different things. You know, they don't have that over here, although they're getting more militarised. Well, I did hear that they also had protests in Australia and New Zealand recently about this George Floyd, death, or, you know, Derek Chauvin kneeling on his neck and asphyxiating him. Have you actually had protests over there, Sean?
Yeah, there's been a few. It hasn't grown large just yet, but there's been a few. It was the same sort of thing that happened back in the time where when Michael Brown died over in the States. When Brown was killed after he committed a crime, no less, the same with Trayvon Martin. When these crimes were committed and the blacks jumped up in arms all about it, they immediately over here, a lot of the Aboriginals started committing crimes and protesting and looting and stuff like that, only because it was going over on over in the States. And I'm thinking, what's it got to do with you as an Aboriginal? You're not even related to the African-American Negro, or what I just call the African Negro. You're not related to that. You're not related to what happened. This has nothing to do. And then a lot of them said, well, what it had to do with, Sean, is because, you know, we are being oppressed. And I'm saying, how can you dare say that you're being oppressed when you get more money than us as whites? So, for instance, if you're on welfare over here, Andy, the whites get what's called JobStart, I think it's called. And then you've got Oz Study. So if you're studying and you're being paid by the government to study as a youth, it's called Oz Study. But if you're an Aboriginal, it's called Ab Study. And Ab Study pays the Aboriginals more than the whites, just, but yet they tell us we can't judge people on their color. So as long as you say, well, you walk in there and you're black, you can get Ab Study, which pays you more. In fact, some whites were walking in and saying, I'm actually Aboriginal, I've got Aboriginal blood, just to be able to get the extra money, even though they were white. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, yeah, no, it's terrible. Can I bring up an article very quickly, if it's okay by you, Andy?
Yeah, we can go any direction you like, Sean.
Okay, so what happens is we know that this dude, this cop, killed this bloke by resting his knee on him until he suffocated out. It crushed him. What happens is there was an article dropped by a person called RJ in a chat, Hooley's blog, that also posts your show, hooleysblog.blogspot.com. And what happens is he dropped an article that says over 100 Minnesota law enforcement officers attended a 2012 conference organized by the Israeli consulate in which Israeli police trained them. Israeli forces often use the knee-on-neck restraint on Palestinians. Meanwhile, Congress is poised to pass a bipartisan $38 billion package to Israel. And it's got an article that goes on to say why this Minnesota cop used the technique that he did to hold this bloke down, or this person down, and it suffocated them, you know. So I just want to read just a little bit more. Mr. Floyd's death in custody last Monday. I don't call him Mr. Floyd. That's why I said person's. I'd rather say person's death because, you know, a lot of these Negroes cause a hell of a lot of problems. And they're not a mister to me. I have no respect for them. And then when they get what's coming to them, all of a sudden the cop has to suffer. You know, there's a lot to look into here. But Mr. Floyd's death in custody last Monday, the last in a succession of police killings of African Americans, has sparked continuing protests and riots. Now, one of the things I witnessed just recently on a video was where what appeared to be whites pulling up beside, with masks on their face, pulling up beside Negroes and handing them bricks. In other words, hey, here's a brick, go throw it through a window. But I'm daring to say that these were probably Jews, because that's what they do. They stir the pot. They basically get everybody roused up. It doesn't tear between blacks and whites, it tears between whites and whites and blacks and blacks. And this is what we're seeing now. They're not tearing just, again, to reiterate, whites and blacks normally stayed apart. They stuck to their own. You know, it even works with the Italians, the white Italians over here. I live in an Italian town. The Italians tend to stick more to the Italians, whilst the common Aussie sticks to the common Aussie. And it's just the way things work. But now what they're trying to do is tear it all to pieces so that we all go at each other. And I think this is just a second stage to martial law, world martial law. We started with the COVID. COVID tore the world apart economic-wise, right? And when it comes to true so-called fascism, and now we've moved on to, oh, the riots have started and the riots are spreading, as you said, to the UK, to Australia and everything like that, even though the UK and Australia shouldn't really be suffering this at all. It's got nothing to do with us. This is all about the second stage of martial law.
Yeah, that certainly looks at the martial law aspect. And the one thing I was interested, you talked about, I think that there's no doubt that there will be, you know, Jews involved in these protests. But what I've seen, and this is what I meant to bring up earlier, but it slipped my mind, was the amount of people in these protests, in pictures in the Daily Mail and things like that that I've seen. And it's pictures of what looks like hundreds of people, and the majority of them are white. And they're generally white young people. And I'm sort of like, there's more in some of these protests of the white people protesting about Black Lives Matter than there are of blacks themselves. And so I find it really, really strange now, because initially it looks like they're trying to, you know, get a race war going between blacks and whites and some sort of divide and conquer. But what I think it actually is it's really the left wing against the right wing, and they view the right wing as the older white people. That's what I think is really, you know, quite troubling at the moment. What do you find amongst sort of, what's the general politics amongst, say, late teen, early 20s people in Australia? I mean, are they all sort of left wing liberals, or how's it over there?
No, I'm really impressed with some of these millennials these days. You know, like, for instance, if you take a look at my son's age group, he's 18, and he's a teacher. He literally tells me what's going on. He tells me of the literal stuff that's going on. And a lot of his mates are on the same page as what I am. They're very much like, you know, the Jews have bred into the white families and everything like that, so that they can't be identified. This is another reason why they rename themselves. You know, Lev Davidovich Bronstein. Most people wouldn't know who that is. That's actually Leon Trotsky, that fronted the Red Revolution, the Bolshevik Revolution. They rename themselves. They breed into white families. And a lot of the youth are getting this now, and they're getting that they are separating, like you said, divide and conquer is the best term to use. But the divide and conquer is, again, not on the side of the blacks and the whites. We were naturally divided. The divide and conquer is separating the whites from the whites. You know, we have created the most brilliant things on the face of the planet: planes, trains, and automobiles. And the most beautiful of architectures, where, you know, we even know, I mean, especially in this day and age, as white people, we know when we're creating architecture, we want a building to be able to drink the light of the sun when it comes up in the morning and warm us in the afternoon from the other side of the building. These brilliant things that we've done over all of these years, and other people taking credit from it because they're breeding into our families and everything like that, and they knew exactly what they were doing. And these kids over here, the baby booming age are probably the worst, I hate to say it, as disrespectful as it may sound. My mother is of the baby booming age, and everything was sort of handed to her on a silver platter. You know, she was able to get a job very easily, get a license very easily, everything like that. She's 74. And it was handed to them on a silver platter. But the youth of today over here, at least over here in Australia, are woken up to it. I've seen a lot worse things coming out of the United States and the UK when it comes to the youth being brainwashed. You know, it's more people my age and the baby booming age that are brainwashed and will fall into the trap. These days, at least this is what I'm witnessing over here in Australia.
Yeah, and the other thing that I've noticed, and I don't know if this is, of course, when millennials are able to work out what's going on, I give them a tremendous amount of credit because, you know, they had all the communism thrown at them in the schools, a lot worse than you or I did when we were going to school, because we know this has been something they've been doing by gradualism over time. But essentially, I don't know, a lot of young men and women today, they look very similar. You know, like the men look more effeminate and the women look more masculine. And it makes you wonder if all the things that they were given with all the vaccines that they were pumped with and goodness knows what else, people talk about the chemtrails in the air, you know, one could react to another, that sort of thing. And it does make me wonder what's actually been done to our youth that can make them, you know, really go for these ideas. Because say when we were young and, you know, you listen to something like the Sex Pistols, for example, you know, it was anti-establishment and all that. What these people are doing, they must realise that they're actually pro-establishment, because, you know, like Donald Trump in America, he's not the establishment, but what, you know, the media and all the Hillary Clintons and all that that they promote, that's obviously the establishment. And these people are saying how wonderful that is. So there doesn't seem to be much rebellion. When you see these people protesting, they're actually just singing from the hymn sheet of the media, from all the left-wing people, which are regarded as the true establishment, and Donald Trump is like an imposter. So there doesn't seem to be much resistance to the establishment today among white people. Obviously, you've seen differently in Australia, but from an American standpoint, what would you say to that?
Yeah. Well, from the American standpoint, definitely, you can tell that they are. They're dancing the establishment tune. Over here in Australia, if I may say too, is that the homosexuality thing and the transsexuality thing, like you were talking about how they're trying to effeminate the men and everything like that, turn the girls into boys and the boys into girls. That's true here too. Even though the youth that I witness that are around my son's age are against the establishment in which Israel is trying to establish, well, what happens is still a lot of them have become emasculated. A lot of these boys that are of my son's age, and my son's not one of them, of course, he's not a homosexual, but a lot of these boys that are of his age are doing the homosexual thing because it's the new cool. It's the new fashion. And it sickens me to no end when you hear them standing there and that they take on that whole ebonics, if you will, gay ebonics, where, hello, how are you? My name's George. And you're sort of like, oh, God. And you know that they're doing it because it's an attention attracting thing. They want to attract attention themselves. Look how diverse I am. See, I'm homosexual. So you can't say I'm not diverse. And it really does get sickening. That's one thing that the millennials need to drop. They need to get rid of that really quickly, because it's not going to do them any favors anytime soon. You know, we as the men are the protectors of our family. We stand tall, we stand tough, we beat our chests before a battle, and we say, I will protect my family. So if any of these riots come to my doorstep, I'm going to stand to the task. I'll take two axes in my hands, two tomahawks in my hands if I have to, because we, you know, we're not allowed to use guns as weapons here, even though some of us might, just saying. We will accordingly deal with the home invader. So when you've got these young lads that are like, oh, no, I'm all for peace and loving. Look, I'm for peace too, but when violence visits my door, it's time I man up. And that's what this Judaic protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion has done. It's emasculated our boys so that they can no longer protect their families. And they've made the black men look like the bigger men, because the blacks don't care what is said on the media or anything. They'll stand to the task. That's just the way they do it. You know, ooga booga type thing. But the thing is, white men, young men are taking a back seat to all of that. And by God, it's going to lead us to nothing but bad pleasures.
Yeah, I think it's certainly this is something I noticed years ago. I mean, you know, when they push the white musicians out today, you know, they're all people like Coldplay and, you know, all sort of effeminate looking guys and very wishy-washy guys. But then, you know, the black men, they put them as these masculine rappers and all this sort of stuff. And of course, that draws the white girls to them. Because they're pushing the black men as the masculine and the, you know, white men, you know, musicians, all this sort of airy-fairy type of stuff. And they know psychologically that even though they tried to encourage all this new man nonsense in the 90s, that what a woman is really looking for is an alpha male. And if they can make the blacks the alpha males as opposed to the whites, then they can promote the racial mixing, which, of course, is something that they want because they want to mix all races together so that there's no nobody has any sort of individuality, any heritage or culture or anything, because it's just all over the place. They don't belong to a particular race anymore. And so I think that's very much part of the agenda, Sean.
The Kalergi plan. Yeah, if you take a look into Richard Kalergi, it was all about mixing all of these different races together, making it a licorice all sorts, if you will, to weaken all races. See, a lot of people would say, because I talk the way I do on my broadcast, that I'm an evil person and everything like that. But if you look at it in hindsight or retrospect, you see that what I'm trying to say is blacks need to be with their blacks so that they can remain and keep their heritage. They can keep their culture, their race, their everything. But we whites should have the right to do so as well. You know, this whole idea. Now, a lot of people call me a racist, and I freely confess that I am. But remember what the original meaning of racist was. It was to identify the difference between race and want to bolster your own race and identify the superiorities and inferiorities between those races. It wasn't to be evil or anything like that. It wasn't to want to kill blacks. It was to say, right, blacks need to be in their neck of the woods, away from whites, and we need to be in ours, and we need to develop in our own ways. So as we develop our trains, planes, and automobiles, they need to develop whatever it is that they want to do over in their neck of the woods. That's what a racist is. It doesn't make you evil to want to do so. This is one thing that people need to keep in mind. It's the same as supremacy. The blacks, for instance, you know, as you were saying, you know, they get up there on the stage and when they're singing their rap and they're talking about, yeah, 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 we're black, and I won't use the bad language that they do, but the thing is, when they're up there on the stage, they're doing it in a masculine way. Us white men need to do our own thing. And I don't want to adopt the rap. I've got no interest in rap whatsoever. I want to be able to do what I have to do in my own masculine way over here, whether it be build trains or planes or become a rocket scientist. There's nothing evil about being a racist. That's one thing we have to keep in mind, Andy.
Yeah, and my point of view is as well, I mean, I see so many black people, you know, living in a sort of, you know, inner city area in London, and so many of them you'll see in their cars and things like that, and they'll have these little African flags and stuff like that, and sometimes of their own nation that they trace themselves back to. So a lot of them, they will keep their heritage, and I encourage that in the sense that, you know, I think that we should, the best way that people as a whole can develop in the world is to have some sort of heritage, some sort of culture, some sort of history that they're going to want to live up to, okay? And that culture is then used to compete with other nations. And that's why when you see things like, I mean, when you watch that sort of World Cup soccer or something like that now, it's ridiculous because, you know, it's only ever, the only real national sides that you see would be sides like Cameroon or Ghana or things like that out of Africa, because they're all Africans from those countries. But then you look at some of the sides like France in the last World Cup, and you know they were majority a black side, and so it's just not representative of the nation. And if these players that are playing for France when they should be playing for, you know, those African countries, then, you know, Africa might already have a World Cup winning team. Now, I'm sort of going just in a little angle here, but what I'm trying to get at is that if everyone lived in their own territory, I'd be quite happy. I'd wish the best for everybody, as long as they don't try and harm other people. If I had a choice of them living in a first world economy that they built and created and maintained, or living in a third world one, I'd want them to do as well as they possibly could. I'd want everybody to. But and if you have that sort of system, then they're constantly competing amongst other nations. And that helps drive them forward. Say, oh, look, these guys have built that, so we're going to make sure we keep up with them and we're going to build this. And the whole world benefits. But when you've got a situation, you've got all these globalists running around, and most of Africa is still third world. So if these people care so much about the world, why have they done nothing for that continent, Sean?
No, I know. And, you know, you make a good point. Like, you take a look at Tommy Sotomayor and Reverend James Manning. They seem to have a higher IQ than a lot of their black counterparts, if you will. They're a lot of the black race. And they just continuously sit there in America talking about how blacks need to cut the crap, if you will. Pardon my French. And they need to start acting like human beings, because per capita, we know who's creating most of the crime. Over here in Australia, there's a reason that Aboriginals are way overrepresented when it comes to being imprisoned. Same with the African-American Negro, or what I call the African Negro, as I say. Here's the thing. They need to cut the crap. And look – if what I've got to say to Reverend James Manning and now Tommy Sotomayor is, look, you do have seem to have a higher IQ and a higher intelligence than the rest of your community, then go back to your country and start educating them. You know, I mean, we as white people need to educate our white people as white. You as black people need to go back to your country and start educating your blacks as blacks. Plain and simply, if you're so brilliant, then go and do your job. Go and educate your own people. You don't need to be here. You don't need to be in this United States or the UK or Ireland and Scotland or Australia. You need to be in your own place. That really angers me that they think themselves so smart and intelligent, but they won't go back and do their job for their own country. You know, I mean, and once they do the job for their own country, there's a big chance that once they educate their own people, you're going to have a lot of the people going back to that country to be at one with their own, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because I actually had James David Manning on the show, and he was saying about how, you know, throughout his life, he's been they've categorized him, you know, he's been black, he's been colored, he's been African-American and all that. And he says he doesn't see himself as African-American because he's never been anywhere near Africa. And, you know, his point is, and how he was raised and where he was raised and things like that. And he said it's ridiculous how the names have always been changed for blacks in America. And he certainly sees he talked about growing up in the 60s in America, and, you know, it was a so much better society, and it certainly seems to have been. Oh, we're running out of time, so I better wrap it up here, Sean. I'll just go and start the closing music. So before we go, Sean, just give us your website again, please. That's tctaunleashed.com. I want to thank Sean so much for joining me today. I want to thank all of you for joining me as well. I will, of course, be back with you all tomorrow. And until then, folks, bye for now.